Welcome to Mindset 52 Podcast, your source for powerful strategies and uplifting stories from top-tier achievers, athletes, entrepreneurs, and industry visionaries. Discover how they thrive in their fields while staying true to what really matters: personal well-being and family. Immerse yourself in their transformative insights and step closer to your highest potential. This is Mindset 52. Here we go.
Welcome everyone to Mindset 52 Podcast with JR Rivera. Today's guest is Ben Navarro, CSF Exteriors owner. Yes. And principal, the man, the myth, the legend, also serial entrepreneur. Been excited to run this back, man. We had a conversation several years ago. Yeah. And been looking forward to this conversation again. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to kind of start off with a little bit of a run back. Tell me a little bit about Ben Navarro. Where do you come from? Where do you, tell me a little bit about your story.
So I grew up in South Omaha.
Are you from South O? South
O. South Omaha. Nice. Yep. Grew up in South Omaha. Went to Spring Lake, Norris, South High. You know, the usual if you grew up in South Omaha. We grew up in, you know, lower class. Now, I don't want to say poor because we always had something to eat, but it was tough. It was challenging. Blessed to have great parents that never really let us know how bad things were. We did grow up a little poor, but that's kind of the fuel to the fire, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you kind of don't really notice it when you're a kid.
When you're a kid, no. You play with sticks before apps came out. Yeah, I didn't need an iPad because they weren't out yet. So luckily I didn't have to deal with that. Growing up in South Omaha, you kind of see a lot. And it kind of gave me a lot of motivation to push through and kind of mark my way out of, the cycle of poverty and stuff like that, that kind of attributes to a lot of our culture. So it's been good.
That definitely is. It's a little bit of a cycle, isn't it? Or at least it seems like it is for a lot of people. Breaking away from it, I mean, it has to be something that triggers it, some kind of a decision, some person, you know, they call it trailblazer or whatever it is. Sometimes it's circumstantial. But the biggest thing is finding that why or at least finding a reason to get after it, right? Did you feel like you were somebody that was meant to do something bigger, or were you just, was it just like something inside, like a fire or something that you just wanted to be different, or it was a sense to belong? What were you looking for?
So I can attribute it to my parents. My mom always said that we can do anything, right? Which most parents say that. But she really did believe it, which kind of gave me that confidence. And then unfortunately, my dad never kind of ventured outside of his comfort zone because he was a good father that wanted to make sure the bills were always paid and stuff like that. So he never was able to be the entrepreneur he wanted to be. Worked at packing houses throughout South Omaha, sure, and Council Bluffs, pretty much since we moved here. So I'm originally from California, but I moved here when I was 8. So, and just watching my parents, and you know, we were always stuck in that cycle of the bills are due, checks come in, bills are due, and I just knew there had to be a way to get out of that
paycheck to paycheck life.
One vacation every couple of years if we got lucky, and it just seemed like it was never going to end.
Yeah,
and you know, watching my dad be so responsible to take care of us also still meant we never got out of where we were, because he couldn't take certain risks because he had to put food on the table.
Right.
And I just knew there had to be a different way. And I obviously watching, MTV Cribs, stuff like that. Yep. Like, you see it.
Yep.
Just like, there's got to be another life for us out there. So that was part of it. There's a lot of stuff throughout life that also pushes you to that. I like nice cars. I see people driving them, like stuff like that. It's just those things give you a lot of fuel.
Puts that twinkle in your eye. It makes you want to shoot for something that's bigger than just this, you know?
Absolutely.
And like we're just talking about, you don't really feel it, but you start getting to the teenage years and you do start seeing that there's other opportunity out there. And it's like, why them, not me?
Yes.
You know, and how can I be there, you know? And how can I make something happen? And it's daunting.
It is. And the biggest thing was not being jealous or upset of other people's fortunes or how fortunate they've been. Obviously, you know, we grew up, my dad drove a rust bucket, all that stuff, you know. And I would see other kids pull in nice cars. Their parents had nice cars. I never understood why. I just understood that that's how we lived. But money is a cycle. And I had to really wrap my mind around how money works, how it generates more, you know, stuff like that. So once I got older and I started understanding how money works and how money makes more money, I really started diving deeper into being more of an entrepreneur, less of an intrapreneur, 9-to-5 kind of guy.
True.
I couldn't do the 9-to-5.
Right.
It was really tough for me.
Yeah. Which
I work a lot more than that now, but
right.
Unfortunately,
yeah. Yeah, that's an irony for sure. I think it was Patrick McDavid, the one that had that book talking about how you need to find those individuals to chase after. And sometimes those situations that cause a fire. Do you think some of those experiences, those memories of those early years, do you think that caused a little bit of a fire in you?
Yeah, well, Pat, it's your next 5 moves, right?
Yeah, I think that's
it. Yeah, the next 5 moves. Great book, by the way.
Yeah.
I recommend it to anybody who wants to get into the entrepreneurial world. He really talks about, which is funny, he kind of, if you read the book, he kind of talks about how to treat your business kind of like the mafia would, which is weird, but he studied the mafia a lot.
Yeah.
And I really liked how he would position himself in a way where he wouldn't hire people unless he trusted them to not be their Donnie Brasco, which is the storyline, right? So every time, you know, you think about bringing somebody onto your team or growing your team, you have to trust them, you know, when your back is turned to them, right?
100%.
So sometimes that does, you know, keep your circle small, the people you work with small. But eventually it does kind of compound and continues to grow. And slowly but surely. But yeah, I really did enjoy that book. It was one of the first books I listened to on Audible.
Yeah.
And then he narrates it too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, he feels great. And that's so true too. Some of those mafia members, gang members, cartel members, they're some of the greatest businessmen to ever live, you know, build empires, obviously through illicit measures, but, you know, they're able to create such organizations with people so devoted. Obviously, sometimes it's through fear.
Nothing to be proud of. But
right,
yes.
But the way they structure, you know, it's nothing short of Amazon or, you know, large enterprises that have structure, mm-hmm. have organization, have management, have, you know, even growth training, you know, and all these different things that we think of as, well, you know, white collar professional abilities of an enterprise, and these guys are doing it too. So, but definitely loyalty is such a hard thing to find. I do think that when you find it, you hold on to it. We were just talking the other day. You put me on this book, Who Not How.
Yes.
I'm almost done with it.
Oh,
phenomenal book. Is it Sullivan? Something Sullivan.
Yeah.
Amazing book. I think it's eye-opening too, because you think about it, but you don't really emphasize it. And when you don't have it in front of your face, you're not applying those thoughts, you know? So you might think that it's a great idea and you might pass it by and be like, okay, that's great. But how do I actually implement it? Well, it has to be in your face so that you can implement it. You can put it into action, or I don't know, make it intentionally so you put it into your daily routine. But that's one of the biggest things that I, over the last couple of weeks since you mentioned that book, that I've been kind of hanging on and running through my head, because it's so true. And I'm kind of like doing retrospect, thinking about those individuals that have counted so much in my life towards success, which I consider, you know, driving towards success. So is there any key players that you would consider right now that have been part of your life that have attributed to your momentum moving so fast?
Oh, God. I don't know where to start. Like I said, my circle is pretty small.
Yeah.
So a lot of anybody that is working with me or works alongside me is...
It's like a thing,
yeah, yeah, they're key players.
Yeah.
You know,
there for a reason.
My fiancée, Yanira.
Yeah.
I mean, bless her. Nobody understands how hard she works. You know, business partners that I have, you know, I can name Hector, Ryan, Mike. Those guys are so loyal. I mean, really, they live and breathe the company the same way I do. You know, business partner, Oscar.
Yeah.
Very great guy. I mean, he one of the guys that gave me the first shot. Ironically, when I first started in the roofing world, they say if you really want to build tough skin, go door knock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I started out door knocking, looking for work. And it was a Friday night, probably about, it was probably 8 o'clock on a Friday night in the summer. And I was out door knocking. And it was my last push, my last neighborhood. And I was like, oh, I had to get out there, right? I knew I had to. And knocked on his door, and he was just kind of shocked in one way or another. And, just kind of told him I was looking for work, that I was a contractor, and I was door knocking, seeing if he had hail damage. He didn't have hail damage, but a month or two later, he called me and said, "Hey, kid, I got a roof I need you to look at." And thankfully, got it taken care of, got the customer taken care of. And then from there, he's a referral machine. So
yeah.
After that, you know, his word carries a lot of power, or strength, I should say. A lot of people trust his judgment. So when he started telling people how good I was at my job, it kind of domino effect. In which case, I still continue to do that. I try to bring customer service, which is why Customer Service First is the name of my brand, to an industry that had very little of it. Obviously, referrals is kind of really where it all started. And so he's been a key member that's helped me get along too as well. And then nothing short of my family. You know, my brother works with me. Love my sister. She's a really hard worker. She's got a baby due coming up. Congratulations to her. And my parents. I mean, they're still always there for anything I need. Support system's really great.
Blast, man. 100%.
Yep.
Running back, we kind of got a little sidetracked there. But running back to CSF, how did everything get started there? Tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah, so CSF, which the acronym is a little tough to remember. Sometimes it gets butchered. Some customer service first. Like I said, that was just something I always knew. There was a void in the industry, and it was very simple. I used to watch the show called Blue Collar Millionaire on CNBC. And one guy built a huge empire, an HVAC company, and all he did was get into the industry and change the way people are treated. He just put customer service first. And that stuck with me. I don't know why it just stuck with me, that one episode. I've seen it over and over again. And it just stuck with me how big he grew his company by just treating people with respect, answering phone calls, returning calls, answering messages.
Would you look at that?
Yeah, just, right? Boom.
Yeah.
Epiphany. Treating people the way they want to be treated in any industry, right? So when obviously I didn't invent roofing. I don't do anything different. I like to think we do things at a higher standard, but we didn't invent the product or the service. All we try to do is provide it at the highest level possible.
I love that.
So when I went off and started CSF, I knew that I wanted to do something different that nobody else was doing, which I know there's a lot of companies that do, but what we wanted to do was lead with that, right? And my business partner, Mike, at the time was actually the one designing the logo. And he really loved the vision so much that he left his job and came to work with me when I started the company. So he's been a great person to have around too as well. Huge motivation. He's doing really well. And it's been one of those ventures where we just stuck to what our vision was, and it's worked. You know, sometimes you get kicked around.
Sure.
Sometimes customer service bites you because you want to under-promise and over-deliver, but sometimes you do have to lead out with saying, hey, we're going to treat you better than most. Here's why. And then you do have to deliver with that. And that's every job, whether it's small or big, dollar amount shouldn't matter, region shouldn't matter, nothing should matter. So you always have to treat people with that level of respect. And it's done pretty well so far. We're in year 7. This will be our eighth season with CSF.
Eighth season. And how many people do you guys have under a staff there?
Not including the crews, there's about 12, 13 employees, including myself.
That's phenomenal.
With the crews, the subcontractors, over 50.
you're not running things the way a typical blue-collar company is ran, and that's one of the things I love about you, man, that you are humble enough to understand that not everything is always perfect, and things are dynamic, and things could always improve. And since I met you, which was 2019, I believe, 2018.
Yes.
Today, so we, man, that was a while back.
I was door knocking then too,
and I was still at State Farm, I think.
that was technically door knocking.
That was great.
I had to walk in and knock on the door.
That was ever since then, you've done things at a different rhythm. And I think that off pace, that kind of, you know, walking with that kind of attitude, walking with that salsa, walking with that demeanor of you are who you are and you're going to do things the way you think they should be ran. You know, even if the status quo is something different, that changes industries and that changes standards. And I think that's how people lead the way. You know, you're applying this, I feel like, now to other systems that you have going on. You know, you're doing a whole lot. Do you want to get into some of that stuff that you're doing? I know you're in the real estate world now.
Yeah.
You're doing a whole lot there.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so same thing. I really had to wrap my mind around what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Right?
Roofing was definitely something that was going to be the catalyst to get me to the next level.
Yeah.
And I've always loved real estate. Love the idea of real estate and how it builds wealth, even on accident.
you
all of a sudden you have a line of credit on your house you didn't know. So real estate was something I always wanted to pivot into. I just didn't know how. So just continued to build my roofing business. But as I did, I'd meet other real estate entrepreneurs, and then slowly bought my first rental, bought our second rental, and then from there just kind of domino effect of the compounding value. And being able to borrow from your existing property to buy the next property. A lot of people might call it the Burr method. There's a lot of different strategies. What's worked for us is I just treat it as our retirement plan.
Yeah.
We buy whatever we buy and we hold, which I hold with my fiance. We self-manage. We try to get good tenants in at an affordable price. And we just make sure that they're taken care of. You know, they call.
Yeah.
We answer with good customer service.
So it's not only quantity, it's quality.
Quality,
you're trying to run everything the way things, again, the way things should be ran. And you know, that's interesting because you're getting into the commercial space, right? You're getting into a lot of that stuff that, you know, there are levels. You're going into these other things and you've never been shy to step in and say, okay, let's look at it. Let's give it a shot.
Yeah, so first thing I had to get away from was that limiting belief.
Yeah.
I had to tell myself, I do belong. I should own this. I can have this. I could drive this. I could live here. So when you get rid of that limiting belief and thinking that that's what your life is about or how it's supposed to be, then there is no ceiling. So every time we break a ceiling in, let's say, our roofing business, that becomes our new floor, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know,
what's your ceiling at? This year,
it was record year.
Yeah.
It was pretty high. Awesome, big number, dude. Yeah. It was a really good number. It was a big number. You know, the Omaha Metro
area. Sad day for the insurance industry.
Yes, unfortunately. And, you know, we've been pivoting a lot to to retail as well, because there is a lot of people in need of roofs and a general contract that will take care of them.
Sure.
Where they do have to come out of pocket. So, you know, we've found ways to help them. We also have offer financing, just try to make it a seamless process from start to finish and then kind of help them get to, if they need new siding, figure out how to get that, whether it's financing, you know, encouraging them to talk to their bank to see if they can get a line of credit, that whatever that case may be, because if the property continues to deteriorate, it's only going to get worse and cost them more in the long run.
Yeah.
So it was really about that. But yeah, back to the limiting belief. That was something that really, really I had to get over. I don't know. I don't know if it's a cultural thing.
Well, how does a kid from South Omaha growing up in, as a regular immigrant family upbringing with all the principles, all the right, everything, like how does that, how do you get over that, you know, and how do you think you find yourself with that mentality of saying, I can do this shit, you know, I got this. It's just a matter of learning how.
Honestly, one of the best books I read, which I think it's number one on everybody's list or should be, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Oh, phenomenal.
Phenomenal book, right? Robert Kiyosaki, classic.
Yeah.
And it really did open up my eyes. And that one I actually read, which I think I'm dyslexic, so it took me a while to read it. But I actually read that book and it's really powerful, you know, in the comparison. And I felt I could put myself in those shoes because I grew up in a family where it was just 9 to 5, 9 to 5, work for retirement. And then by the time you retire, we'll see what's left. So that book was really powerful. There's actually a sequel to that book called The Cashflow Quadrant.
Yep.
That book opens your eyes to a whole different, you know, whole nother level. Because then what it really taught me is that money's not necessarily real.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's a really weird statement to say, but when you really focus on how money is printed, how it's duplicated, how you use it to make more. It's just a tool. And when you learn to utilize that tool for assets versus liabilities, then it can only compound and get stronger and stronger. Mm. And that's why, you know, I have my numbers and my percentages of what I will spend, what I won't spend, what I'll invest, what I won't invest. And then you have fund money too.
Mm-hmm.
But the fund money should always come on the very back end. Even after I started CSF, we lived well under our means for about 4 to 5 years. And then it wasn't until at some point where we were like, okay, we do have to move on and move up. Just to build that kind of lifestyle that my fiance deserved.
And yeah, yeah.
I deserved. You know, yeah. After so many years, you know, of working my ass off, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I knew I had to really, you know, level up, if that makes sense. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know,
right.
Buying a nice home, there's nothing wrong with buying a nice home if you can afford it.
Yeah.
You know, nice cars, whatever the case may be. That's what I work hard for.
Yeah.
So that's been, you know, books have been my biggest mentor, especially Audible.
With all this growth and experiences that you've learned to have, what would you say that success means to you?
Well, for one, I gauge my success at work based on how my guys are taken care of. I don't really know what I make. I do like to focus on what they make. When you start treating your employees that way, which I don't want to call my employees, people 100%. That you work with, you really start to put things into perspective. Because if they're happy, you're happy. And if they're making money, typically so are you. Okay. So I focus on how much are they making? Are they having a good year? If they're having a good year, great. How do we make it better? If they're having a bad year, how do we step in and help? But yeah, as far as my team, with their loyalty comes my loyalty, and I focus on how much they can make, how much they can grow. I encourage them to be entrepreneurs as well. You know, slowly but surely that team members in my company have also bought their own real estate. They've kind of shifted as well, too.
Yeah.
Now they're buying real estate.
Carried on the mentality.
Yeah, yeah. And it's sometimes it's that limiting belief for other people as well. But once you start learning how banks operate, how lending works, how just simply filling out an application.
Simple
it's not
leverage.
That hard. Yeah, it's leverage.
Yeah.
That's all it is. You leverage $100 to make $200. It's pretty simple.
Now, how do you balance... This is, you know, this is the conversation that kind of gets into a little bit of entangled feelings. But, you know, you have Yanira and you have everything else that's going on in your personal life. How do you balance all the things that you're doing and focusing on the growth, all the new projects on top of living your personal life, balance your personal life, balance your being a good, you know, significant other, being a good son, being a good brother?
Well, the balance is hard. It's not easy. It's really easy.
Thank you for being honest.
Yeah. It's hard. I'm not going to lie. It's not something you just say, 8 hours of this, 3 hours of this, 2 hours. No. You're either on go, go, go mode, or you kind of tune down for family mode, or, you know, you have to make time for your significant other. Fortunately, she works with me, but sometimes that does affect us where I don't make enough personal time for her, which that's something I need to work on. But the balance is important. My love language is giving. So that's kind of what I do is I take care of my family. I take care of my people, take care of my woman. So I don't necessarily know if I make enough time and balance, but I do show, you know, how much I care for everybody that's around me with, you know, how I express my ways. But yes, it is, it's very difficult to balance, especially as an entrepreneur in your first 5 years, you know.
No.
It's 100 miles an hour, and if you don't take a meeting or if you don't go to an appointment, somebody else will.
Yeah.
So that's always been my mentality. If I pass up on a lead, my competition's going to get it. So it's the balance has been hard, but with like books like Who Not How, I've been able to realize, hey, I don't have to do every single little thing. You know, the power of leverage is huge. You know, there's five of me now doing this instead of one. Because I would try to handle, I wore every hat. So now not wearing every hat at the company allows me to grow the company even more.
Which now that kind of turns into another question, which is I think something that all of us struggle with. And it's the dichotomy of separating yourself from the business that you know to be able to grow into the business that you want to be in. And sometimes that separation of saying, I'm going to fire myself from this position to be able to put somebody else in that place. and count on that individual to do as good of a job that I did, or close to it, it's to be able to grow. That's very difficult. How have you been able to overcome that?
It is difficult. I did have to accept that, and I forgot what book I listened to this on. Nobody's going to do your job the way you would, especially because you're so invested into something. But if you can find somebody to do what you do at a very reasonable level, 70%, maybe 80%, then you can duplicate yourself and move on to a different role. Knowing that it's never going to be at 100%, but you're able to duplicate yourself. So now you're operating in two worlds and you're able to move on. And what I've had to do is let go, yes.
Yeah.
I have had to let go. There is files I come across. I'm like, ooh, this could have been a little bit better. Or, you know, I get a complaint because somebody's not treated the way that they're used to by myself, maybe. So those things do happen. But if you don't let go to grow, you're stuck in the same wheel. And eventually you will burn out, 60, 70, 80-hour weeks for 5, 6, 7 years. It's tough.
It'll get to you.
I'll be 36 this month, starting my company in my late 20s, and I've lost most of them. But in a good way. Now I'm learning to enjoy the journey. Now I'm learning to enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I will stop. I thought there was an end game, but it's enjoying the journey now.
Yeah.
Which has kind of been
fun. That's interesting that, I've talked to so many people, and I run it back, have conversations with them several years later. I think maturity kind of starts settling in growth. And don't get me wrong, they're still going just as fast, if not faster, because of leverage, because of knowledge, because of greater connections. But they start realizing that, you know what? It's maybe not so much about that nice car. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not so much about that nice house. Maybe this whole little game is about life, is about the journey itself.
Yeah.
And that I love that concept, because we don't have a whole lot of time. We actually don't even know how much time we have on this. It could be cut off, tomorrow. So embracing that journey, however long it is, and waking up every morning saying, all right, let's get it.
Yep.
That's what it's about, man.
And that's what really changed for me. I don't know if I told you when I had my accident. And I herniated 3 discs. Yeah. I was almost paralyzed. So after that accident, I didn't make a full recovery. Well, for the most part, and I realized, okay, it's time to enjoy life a little bit, not just work over and over 80 hours a week. So then I did start to enjoy life a little bit more, started getting more into studying how the wealthy live their lives, not just how they spend their money. And I found out that the wealthy focus more on experiences than they do material things. So that's when, okay, experiences versus material things.
Sure.
What does that look like? How do you define that? So my first experience, because we're still obviously here working, I bought a couple of jet skis.
Yeah.
You remember we've been on.
100%, right?
And that was kind of that epiphany of like, okay, this is what money can do for you. It can bring you experiences as well. So, because they weren't crazy expensive.
Right.
But the experience of riding jet skis and being out
on the water. Those are memories we'll never forget.
We've had a great time. We got rained out that one time.
Oh, my gosh. That was great.
So, learning to enjoy the journey and spending time on the experiences, which we leave to Cancun next week, is those types of things that you have to enjoy as they're coming along, but also make time to make more memories, more experiences, more trips. Sometimes, if we've gotten beat up, I'll book us a couple flights to Phoenix.
Yeah.
I love to play poker. Mm-hmm. My fiance loves to sit by the pool and sip on a drink. We'll just go for the weekend. But we remember every trip. It might only be 2 or 3 days because we have to get back to work, but we remember how much fun it was.
Sure.
Or how bad I played cards. But
hopefully not lost the whole lot.
No. So, that's really been for me. It's been the experiences and the journey going forward.
And I do like that, even with your team, that's one of the things that you do towards the end of the year during your, I guess, the slower season of the roofing and contracting business, you are taking them on trips.
Yes.
And that's not something that most companies do, if anything, it's like a little bonus or this or that. Yeah. You're going on full-on trips to...
Yep. So, this year we will be leaving...
That's not cheap, man. That's a lot of people.
It's not cheap, but... They've earned it.
Yeah.
And these were goals that we set from the beginning of the year. But we are going to Cancun. We're taking the whole team and their partners, significant others, to Cancun for 6 days, 7 days. Wow. During Super Bowl weekend, we're going to have a Super Bowl party out there on the beach. I mean, all expenses paid. I paid for the flights, the hotels. It's about 30 of us that are going.
Wow.
And it's going to be a beautiful experience because we've done it before. And everybody just comes back so refreshed, so relaxed. All the drama from the office, all the you know, where people butt heads. We're in sales. So, you know, egos getting in the way and stuff like
that.
Wolf pit. Yeah, exactly. So when you do make time to hang out with people outside of work, you find that energy comes back. And not only that, it's a great experience. It's a good company trip. I mean, it's fun. I wanted to have a company where I'd want to work at, right? I always saw how Google treated their customers or their employees, I should say, and, you know, snacks and everything's free. And I don't know if you saw that movie with Vince Vaughn. I was like, oh, I'm not smart enough to work there, but that'd be cool. So that's kind of how my office is. You know, as you've seen, there's a lot of food there.
Yeah.
We're always eating. The trips, you know, we do try to make it a fun environment, but we do work hard in the process.
Work hard, play hard. Now, with everything that you have on your hands, balancing your personal life, you know, being that individual that you want to be to find that success on this journey, what would you say? Do you have anything that you want to talk to us about for the future? Like, what do the next 5 years look like in case we don't get a run back? Now, we have to get another conversation. can't wait that long again. But what are the next few years looking like?
Definitely a family. That's our biggest focus now.
Love that.
We put the business in front for so long
that,
you know, we did hold off on starting a family. So obviously looking to starting a family, spending more time with my family, really pulling back from how hard I have to work and stress and delegating responsibilities. If I'm going to continue to run the business, I'm going to continue to grow the business, I do have to learn to delegate and let other people deal with their projects, their stresses, and not make it all about how much I can take on. What that's going to do is it's going to allow me to give myself a little bit more balance. You know, parents are getting older, siblings are growing up. If I do start a family, I can't work 80 hours. I'd be a bad parent, in my opinion. Mm-hmm, nobody else is, right? In my opinion, if I'm working 80, 90 hours, I would never see a child. So I wouldn't want to do that. So the next 5 years, continue to grow the business, find that right balance, and just kind of find a way to escape the stresses of being an entrepreneur and kind of feeling like you've made it.
Yeah.
And then continue to grow from there. There's a lot. There's a lot of entrepreneurs that live stress-free.
Yeah.
I would like to be one at some point.
100%. Well, Ben, do you want to leave us with anything else? Another, maybe anything for the public that you want to put out there? Any message for young entrepreneurs? Maybe they're starting to get into the game, haven't seen a breakthrough.
Yeah, I always tell people, don't ask advice from people that wouldn't do what you're about to do. Never do that. Don't ask advice from somebody who wouldn't do what you're going to do or willing to do what you're going to do, because their answer is going to be negative. You're going to carry that. If you want advice from somebody, go for somebody that's done what you want to do and then some. And then just appreciate our market. Like, our market, our city, our state, our country, greatest country in the world. Like, seriously, if you can't make it, it's because you don't want to, or you're not trying hard enough, respectfully. I don't see how, you know, a kid like me, who, you know, got in trouble as a kid, built multiple businesses that have done well. It just takes hard work. You're going to get kicked around. It sucks. But just keep pushing. If you push hard enough, you're going to break that ceiling.
Love it. Ben Navarro, thank you so much, brother.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being on the show.
Absolutely. I'll be back.
Till next time.
Yes, sir.